Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 14, The Disappearance of Lord Krishna, Text 35 to 36. Mangalaya cha lokanam shemaya cha bhavaya cha aste yadu kula ambodo adya ananta saka Puman. So what does Mangalaya mean? Yes, for all good. And Lokanam? All the planets. Yeah. And Yadu? Yadu dynasty. And Kula? Kula. What's that? No. Like Gurukula. You've heard of Gurukula? No. Kula. Gurukula. The family of the Guru. So Kula means family. And Ambodo. Ambudi. Vardhanam. You've heard that before? What's that? Increasing what? Ocean. Adya. Yeah. Let's see, what is it? The original, right? Ananta. Ananta. Who's unlimited? Anantashesha. And what's another? Who's the original Anantashesha? Yes, Lord Balaram. Saka? What's that? Yeah, company. Puman? No. That's Purusha. Person, yeah, person. Actually, here it says the supreme enjoyer. Anyhow, it means that's Purusha. But here is Puman means person, but I guess it's referring to Anantade. Mangalaya cha lokanam, shemaya cha bhavaya cha, aste yadu kulam bodo, adyo nanta sakapuman. Mangalaya cha lokanam, shemaya cha bhavaya cha, aste yadu kulam bodha, adyo nanda sakha puman, yad bahu danda guptaya, swapuryam yadavaur chita, kridanti paramanandam, Mahapurushika Iva Mangalaya. For all good. Cha. Also. Lokanam. Of all the planets. Shemaya. For protection. Cha. Yadvahu danda guptaya. Swapuryam yadavaur chita. Kridanti paramanandam mahapurushika eva mangalaya. For all good. Cha. Also. Lokanam. Of all the planets. Shemaya. For protection. Cha. And. Bhavaya. For elevation. Cha. Also. aste there is Yarukula Ambodo. In the ocean of the Yadu dynasty, Adya, the original, Anantasaka, in the company of Ananta Balaram, Puman, the supreme enjoyer. So who can give the translation without looking at the book? What would the translation be? Mangalaya means auspicious, cha, lokanam means of all the planets. So what would mangalam, loka, cha, lokayam mean? Yes, very good. Shemaya means for the protection, and cha, bhavaya for the elevation, cha. So what would that mean? For the protection and the elevation of what? Yeah. What else could it be? Aste, there is Yadukula Ambodo in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty. Adyo Nanda Sakapuman. So, who stay in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty? And why is he staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty? Yes. Not very difficult, was it? And who is Ananta? Who is he? What are some of his qualifications? What does Puman mean? And what is Adya? The original. So he's the original personality of Godhead and the supreme enjoyer. Lord Balaram is staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty just for the upliftment and the protection of the entire world. Soon, pretty soon we'll be translating Sanskrit slokas. We can finish off the Mahabharata. So, translation. In purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The original personality of Godhead, the enjoyer, and Balaram, the primeval Lord Ananta, I guess there's two persons here, are staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty for the welfare, protection, and general progress of the entire universe. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of the Lord, are enjoying life like the residents of the spiritual sky. Purport. As we have discussed many times, the personality of Godhead Vishnu resides within each and every universe in two capacities, namely as the Garbhadakshayi Vishnu and the Shirodakshayi Vishnu. The Shirodakshayi Vishnu has his own planet on the northern top of the universe. And there is a great ocean of milk where the Lord resides in the bed of the Ananta incarnation of Baladev. Thus Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the Yadu dynasty to the ocean of milk and Shri Balaram to the Ananta where Lord Krishna resides. He has compared the citizens of Dwarka to the liberated inhabitants of the Vaikuntha Lokas. Beyond the material sky, further than we can see with our eyes, and beyond the sevenfold coverings of the universe, there is the causal ocean in which all the universes are floating like footballs. And beyond the causal ocean, there is an unlimited span of spiritual sky, generally known as the effulgence of Brahman. Within this effulgence, there are innumerable spiritual planets, and they are known as the Vaikuntha planets. Each and every Vaikuntha planet is many, many times bigger than the biggest universe within the material world. And in each of them, there are innumerable inhabitants who look exactly like Lord Vishnu. These inhabitants are known as the Maha Parushikas, or persons directly engaged in the service of the Lord. They are happy in those planets and are happy without any kind of misery, and they live perpetually in full youthfulness, enjoying life in full bliss and knowledge, without fear of birth, death, old age, or disease, without influence of Kala, eternal time. Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the inhabitants of Dwarka to the Maha Purushikas of Vaikuntha Loka, because they are so happy with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are many references to the Vaikuntha Lokas. They are mentioned here as Madhama, or the kingdom of the Lord. Mangalaya cha lokanam shemaya cha bhavaya cha aste yaru kulam bodo adyonanta sakapuman. Yad bahu danda guptayam swapuryam yadavar chita kridanti paramanandam mahapurushika iva. The original personality of Godhead, the enjoyer, and Balaram, the primeval lord Ananta, are staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty for the welfare, protection, and general progress of the entire universe. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of the Lord, are enjoying life like the residents of the spiritual sky. Namaste Sarasatundeva Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Sitarne. Prabhupada mentions many times that we have to become attracted to the spiritual world. Because unless we become attracted to the spiritual world, why will we desire to make spiritual progress in order to go there? For instance, in order to become attracted to go to different places, they make so much advertisement. I don't know, here people come here because we make some advertisement. If we didn't make any advertisement, very few people would come here because they wouldn't know anything about it. But when people see the advertisement, see the smiling children, the happy farm, the beautiful deities, the big palace, the big castle, people think, yes, I should go there and see what these people are doing. Then they have to purchase their ticket, which they work for, they paid money for, and then they get on the bus and come here. So not only do they have to hear about it, but they have to make some endeavor in order to get here. No one just appears here, unless you're a great yogi. And for doing that, one had to do great austerities for many lifetimes. So for any activity to go anywhere, we have to desire to do so. And falsely or correctly, so much propaganda is made to induce people or encourage people to go to different places. Practically every place in this world, people are induced to go to. Even during the wars, just like they recently had a war in Yugoslavia, they had one in Bosnia, they had so many wars. And there's even a travel agency that takes people to these war zones. Expensive. They actually take people in order to see the war going on. So people even pay for that. Although everyone else is leaving, there's a group of tourists coming. So this is the nature of the material world, is that everyone is looking for some nicer place to live in, to experience, some new experience. Although it's more or less the same experience all the time. People work 50 weeks during the year, and then for 2 weeks they're on vacation. They go to some resort, and usually it rains half the time. They sit out in the sun and they get sunburned and get skin cancer for their holiday. And then they try to enjoy in so many different ways, spend all their money, and come back with a headache and a stomach ache, and wish they had 2 more weeks to recover before going back to work from their vacation. So the nature of the material life is, although everyone's trying very hard to find it a very nice place, but Krishna says, A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punarvartano Jana Mami Upetya Tu Kunteya Punar Janma Navidite. From the highest planet in the material world all the way down to the lowest, they're all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So we've heard that many times, that every place is a place of misery, but still, even we sometimes think, maybe if I was in some other place, the misery would be nicer there. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam it says, Tasyaiva heto prayate te kovido talabhyate yad brahmatamu parida talabhyate dukavad anitaksukam kalyena sarvatra gavira ramhasa. That those who are actually intelligent and who are philosophically inclined should endeavor for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable by wandering anywhere within this material world. that although we're looking for happiness, but that will automatically come in the due course of time. Just like in the due course of time, even without endeavoring for it, we automatically attain distress. Therefore, when Prahlad Maharaj saw the python man, he asked him, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I'm just sitting here thinking about Krishna because I've learned that there's really no need to go anywhere because everything will automatically happen to me, whatever is supposed to happen. If I just sit here, whatever happiness or distress I'm destined for, that's automatically going to come. So I decided just to sit here and meditate upon Krishna. And as you can see, I've become quite fat because people are giving me so many things and I just eat whatever they give me. Now I've become fat." Generally, we've heard the story of the lion in the jungle. He doesn't simply open his mouth and expect all the animals to walk in. But here's the example of a python man. He didn't even open his mouth and still people were bringing him so many things. So in that way, he showed that there's no real need to endeavor for happiness in the material world because that will come in the course of time. Of course, happiness in the material world means simply to get the necessities of life, somehow or another, enough to eat, a place to sleep, some protection, etc. So those things will automatically be provided according to our karma. Of course, in the case of a devotee, Krishna says, yoga shema vihamyaham. So what does the word shema mean? Yeah, so Krishna also guarantees protection. He says, tesham sadata yuktanam. No, tesham, who's that verse? Tesham anukamparatam aham agyana jam tamaha na shamyam yatma bhavashto gyana deepena pat. No, I got that right. Tesham eva nukamparatam. No, that's not the verse I'm looking for. It's tesham ananyas chintayantomam te jana paripasate tesham niti vyuktanam yoga shemam vahamyaham. Ananyas chintayantomam, simply by thinking about Krishna, always. Ananyas chintayantomam ye jana paripasate tesham niti vyuktanam yoga shemam vahamyaham. So this vihami means that Krishna will personally bring what we're lacking. As you probably heard the story of Anantacharya, who didn't accept or couldn't believe that Krishna was personally going to bring whatever the devotee lacked. Why would Krishna leave Goloka Vrindavan just to bring us our Vico toothpaste? Certainly he'll have one of his agents do that. So he crossed out the word vihami and substituted another word. And then he went out to do his morning duties. And in the meantime, two little beautiful boys came to the door bearing all kinds of fruits and vegetables, and the acharya's wife accepted it. But she noticed that these two beautiful little boys, one blackish and one whitish, they had marks all over their body. So she said that who has sent all these vegetables and fruits? So the two little boys said it was the acharya who sent it. But why do you have these marks all over the body? Because the acharya, he scratched us all over our body. So the acharya, he's become so cruel. So she took all the fruits and vegetables, made a big feast. And when the acharya came back, he saw there was a big feast and said, "Where did the fruits and flowers and vegetables come from?" So his wife said, "That two beautiful boys, one blackish and whitish, they brought these, and they said that you had sent them, and that although they were so beautiful, you had scratched them all over their bodies, and they said that you had done this to them." So the acharya realized that this was, of course, Krishna and Balaram, and that they were demonstrating that they indeed carry what the devotee lacks and preserves what they have. So he reinstated the word vihami, that Krishna indeed personally comes and carries what the devotees need. And shemaya, he gives them the protection. So for the devotee, Krishna personally takes care of them, and for the non-devotee, then they'll get exactly what they deserve from their previous activities. They can't increase it. They can't decrease it. Of course, they may use it up all of a sudden. They may spend all their pious activities all at once, or waste them, or throw them away. But that's possible. Just like one may worship the demigods, and although he may not deserve something, he may receive some temporary boon from the demigods. But that's also according to his karma. But what one should really spend one's time in is how to make some spiritual progress, rather than worry about how I'm going to improve my material situation. Of course, the devotees never decry that we shouldn't get the basic necessities of life. Not that we're not going to do anything. And we're not going to do anything and expect that Krishna will just pay the rent and pay the water bills. Krishna never didn't tell Arjuna, if you sit down on the chariot, have a snap, and I'll fight the war and kill everyone. I'll wake you up after it's all done. Don't worry. No, Krishna was trying to induce Arjuna to fight on his behalf because that was his duty. So Krishna expects everyone to do their duty, and then in the course of doing one's duty, then all the necessities of life will naturally be provided. The basic necessities of life. Not that I'm working for Krishna, so now Krishna is going to provide everything for me, so I should get a big house and a huge car and a huge bank balance because Krishna is rich. So definitely he'll reciprocate and give me everything I want. But we have the example that although Lord Shiva, he's so poor that him and his wife, they live underneath a tree. Big tree though. It's not an ordinary tree. It's a huge tree. And still all his devotees, they're fabulously wealthy of Lord Shiva. Banasura, he had 1,000 arms, he had a huge kingdom. Ravana, he had a kingdom made out of gold. So Lord Shiva's followers are fabulously wealthy. But Lord Vishnu, who's unlimitedly wealthy, he lives in Chintamani palaces with kalpa vriksha trees, and he's surrounded by Lakshmi's goddesses of fortune, and his devotees generally have nothing. They're dead broke. So, Pariksha Maharaj is wondering, why is this? That Lord Shiva, he's so poor and his devotees are so rich. And Lord Vishnu is so rich and his devotees are so poor. Why is that? And then it's explained because the wealth in this material world is actually not really wealth. It's actually an entanglement for anyone who gets it. Just like if you have if you owned an ocean of poison, what would be the benefit to you? I'll sell you half my shares in the ocean of poison, real cheap. So similarly, the material world, which is considered to be poisonous for the soul, the more the soul becomes involved and entangled in the material world, the more he's said to become degraded. It's to his detriment. Therefore, when someone awards someone great material opulence, often it's not for that person's benefit. On the other hand, the devotees of Vishnu who are on the spiritual platform, they've actually are enjoying an unlimited amount of happiness which goes on forever, which is the real wealth of the soul. Therefore, that's what's being advertised, is how, in the uniform of life, to spend one's time to come to the higher platform of consciousness rather than the trying to make this temporary material world a pleasant place to live in, which can never be a pleasant place. But it is expected that one should at least strive by doing one's duty, one will get at least the basic necessities of life to keep the body and soul together. Therefore, there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that life's desires should never be kamendriya pritir labo jivata yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karma vi. That life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. Amasya Nandira Pritir. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life for self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the Absolute Truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So, kamasya nendriya pritira, lavo jivata yavata. So, at least the basic necessities of life, we should at least try to strive for that by doing our, while we're doing our duty. But these things should not be utilized for sense gratification. Jivasya tattva jignasya. So, the real goal of human life is tattva jignasya narto yas cheha karmavi. That should be the goal of one's works. And of course we heard the glories, as Prabhupada mentions here in the Bhagavad Gita, there is some hint of the glories of Krishna's world that he lives in. Avyato shira ityutas tamahu paramam gatim yat prapyana nivartante tad dhamma paramam mama. Parastasmat tu bhavan yo vyakto vyakta sanatana yaksa sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhata. Vinasya dhyavanasya su. What's the next one? Parastasmat tu bhavan yo vyakto vyakta sanatana yaksa sarveshu bhuteshu yaksa vinasya nasya su. That beyond this manifested, temporarily manifested, and unmanifested material energy, there's another nature which is supreme and is never annihilated. It is called supreme and never annihilated. When all this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. Yaksa sarveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu navinashyati. So that, in other words, here in the material world, we're always worried what's going to happen to us next. Because we're never sure when we have to leave this body. And even this whole planet, even if we could live for a long time, even this planet is annihilated eventually. And even the universe is eventually annihilated. So no one is secure here. Even Lord Brahma has life insurance. Even he's unsure exactly how long he's going to live. Whether he's going to be able to maintain his Satyaloka. Because eventually even Satyaloka burns down. Even with all the insurance Lord Brahma has, even Lord Vishnu's insurance, still even Satyaloka eventually burns. And no fire department can put out that fire. Therefore, avyakto shira yuktyutas, that which the Vedantins described as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having obtained it, no one returns, that is my supreme abode. So the abode is so nice that no one wants to leave it, although anyone who wanted to leave it could leave it, but it's so nice that no one wants to leave it. Because there is nothing but enjoyment, and here there is nothing but suffering. If one goes to a place where there's nothing but enjoyment, and one doesn't think, well, I'm only happy here, let me leave this place and find another place where I can suffer. No, everyone is searching for happiness, even in the material world, and even when we get a little flickering of happiness, we become so attached to that happiness, we never want to leave it, although we eventually have to leave it. So what to speak of an ocean of happiness where the happiness is ever new and increasing, that no one ever wants to leave it. And there Krishna also gives us another hint in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Adityana Maha, what is that? In the 15th chapter. Yad Aditya Gatam Tejo Jagat Bhavasetye Stira. Oh, that's the wrong one. Tadbhasyate suryo nasa sanko napavaka yad gyatvana nivartante tad dhamma paramamama. That abode of mine is not illuminated by sun, nor the moon, by fire or electricity, and one who reaches it never returns to this material world. And the Krishna book gives this little hint of what the activities are like there, and Srimad Bhagavatam describes also about Vaikuntha and the kingdom of God. And there are other books, such as the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And there are many books describing about Krishna's pastimes. So these give us some idea about what Krishna is like. Even the Nectar of Devotion, we can read so much about Krishna and his relationship with the different types of devotees. And of course, in the Brahma Samhita, it also describes Krishna's abode. Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kapataruvo Druma Bhumis Chintamani Karamayitayam Amritam Kata Kanam Natyam Gamanam Apivangsi Priyasaki Chiranandam Jyoti Param Apitat Asvadyam Apicha Sayatra Siyatra Shirabdi Shravati Surabhi Biyascha Sumahan Nime Sharadark Yova Rajati Nahiyatrapi Samaya Bhaje Sweta Dvipam Tamaham Iha Golokam Itiyam Vedantaste Shiti Vira Charakati Paye. So there Krishna Loka is also described a little bit. That Krishna loves everyone there and everyone loves Krishna. Shriya Kanta, Kanta, Parama, Purusha, Kalpataruvo. And the trees there are all desire trees. No one has to work for a living. There's no 9-to-5 job there. That anything one needs, one simply goes to a tree and asks for it. But people don't need the same things we need. It's not that I need toothbrush. I need a toothpaste there. I need a bar of soap. Because people have a spiritual body there. There's no material necessities there. What they simply ask for is some leaves and flowers and fruits to please Krishna with them. Kalpataruvo, Druma Bhumis Chintamani. Druma, that the land there is made out of touchstone. There's no poverty there. Everything there, even the land on Govardhan Hill, when you walk on Govardhan Hill during the winter, when it's a little cooler, that Govardhan Hill becomes warm. It warms your feet. And during the summer, when it's hot, then Govardhan Hill is cooling. So this is the, everyone there is a friend of each other, and they're all helping and serving each other. Even the land, the breeze, the trees, everything there is full of transcendental happiness and bliss, and they're all servants of all the devotees, trying to please them in so many different ways. Tuma Bhumis Chintamani Garamayi Toyam Amrita, and the water there is just like nectar. You don't have to mix, you know, ice cream together with soda or anything. Just the water itself is unlimitedly sweet and nectarian. And people are all dancing there. No one is walking. Everyone is singing. Everything there is full of all the residents. They're all tasty and enjoyable. Everything is lit up and bright and enthusiastic. No one is pessimistic there. You don't meet some, you know, desire tree and it's having a bad day or something. You gotta preach to him. Everyone there is very enthusiastic. The cows there give oceans of milk, and there is no, people are not growing older. Everyone there is growing younger and more enthusiastic every day. Everything there is newer and fresher at every moment. No one thinks that, oh, tomorrow we'll see Krishna. I saw him every day. Maybe we can see Lord Ramachandra. Let's go to Ayodhya. Get something new. But no, everyone there, every moment, everything is completely fresh. Everyone in there is thinking, we've never seen Krishna before. When will that day be? We'll actually get our first opportunity to see Krishna. And that Goloka Vrindavan is only known by very few self-realized souls within this material world. So we're very fortunate. We have some hint that there is a place that people are always hankering for and wondering about. Sometimes they call it Never Never Land, or maybe it's the heaven or the great teepee in the sky, whatever they call it. But that land is actually Goloka Vrindavan that people are hanking for. And that land is accessible simply through the process of bhakti yoga. Simply by desiring to go there, we can actually gradually obtain that transcendental abode. The only thing we have to do is become convinced that there's no reason to work so hard in order to try to enjoy this material world. If we can give up our plan making for having more exciting, peaceful, happy situation in this material world, and instead try to dedicate our consciousness to developing our spiritual awareness, then the result is if we make spiritual progress, then our actual goal of life can be understood and realized. So something like that is explained here, that Krishna appeared with Balaram in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty just for the welfare of the universe. He didn't come here because he wanted to see what his properties were like in this material universe, because he figured, I might as well check it out and see how much the stock market went up and how much my bonds are doing and who's, you know. Krishna came here simply for the welfare with Balaram, for the welfare of all the planets in this universe, so that by hearing about Krishna, everyone can make progress towards the spiritual abode where we originally come from. So, thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Some people ask, if God is perfect, why didn't He make this material world perfect for our enjoyment? Why so much misery?
Because there is no enjoyment. It's already perfect. He's made it perfect. What is the imperfection? You think the perfection should be that He should give us the opportunity to perfectly enjoy in a place which is miserable. No, Krishna has made it perfect. Here, everyone's trying to become God. But the problem is that no one is God, so how can anyone become God? There is only one God. But because we want in so many ways to become God, Krishna is giving us all the opportunities in so many different ways to try out to become God. The supreme, the enjoyer and the controller. But there's only one God, that's Krishna, and there's only one source of real enjoyment, which is Krishna. So, the question is, if just like the government, they say if the government is perfect, well, why does it create prisons? Well, because it's perfect, therefore it creates prisons, because it knows that some of the population will be rascals, and they'll become prisoners. They'll become criminals, and they'll have to be arrested, and they'll be put into prison. So Krishna has created the prison house in the material world just to punish us, not for our enjoyment, for our punishment, because that's part of His perfection. What do you do with criminals? You don't try and encourage them. No, the government, its perfection is it punishes them to rectify them. That's its perfection. The criminals may not appreciate that, but that's due to their imperfection. They don't realize they're supposed to be purified and made into good citizens again.
It's like a dictator who put out his roles and everybody has to play.
Yes, that's right. He's the supreme aristocrat. He's the supreme dictator. See, you may not like it. You may be rebellious. You may not like the fact that God is the supreme controller of everything, but that's who He is. That's why we're here, because we didn't like it. He's giving us free choice. We can rebel against Him, or we can cooperate with Him. But ultimately, we're dependent on Him, even to rebel against Him. We may not like it. Too bad. Doesn't change anything. Yes.
Maharaj said that simply by desiring someone can go there. But my question is, what are actions connected with this desire? Because I understand some actions must be there.
Yeah, well, desire, real desire is shown by our activities. That's all we're doing is desiring. But when we really desire something, then we do something. Just like if I desire to eat, I just don't sit there and desire. I go and look around to find something to eat. So when my desire is strong, then it manifests as not only thinking, but also as feeling and willing. So real desire will be shown by how much I'm absorbed in trying to do something to please Krishna. Yes.
It's a bit inconceivable, I think, when you think of it, the spiritual world, everybody continually one wants to become more happy. Nobody's thinking of how I can be best to get myself. Everybody wants to become more spiritual than they are. So some sources think that Krishna is the embodiment of happiness, so he's the most happy, so why I cannot become?
Well, the most happy? Because we're only little tiny souls. How can we become everything? But if we dovetail, if we become connected with the supreme happiness, then we also become happy. We become supremely happy. Just like when the spark is in the fire, it becomes as bright as it can be. If the spark is thinking, why can't I be the whole fire? And if I can't be the whole fire, then I'm going away. Then it's insane, that's all. We can't accept the fact that it's a little spark. Once you become the whole fire, then it has the problem. But if it gets into the fire, then it becomes as bright as the fire does. But it can never become the whole fire.
Krishna must see this when he acknowledges he wants to become more and more happy. But, like you're saying, he cannot become the most happy. The desire of the source ever can become more and more happy.
So Krishna is unlimitedly happy. So the more we try to please Krishna, the more we feel Krishna's happiness, the more our happiness increases. Our happiness is actually just dependent upon Krishna being happy. You know, we can't independently become happy. We become happy the more Krishna becomes happy.
You could say about two kinds of happiness. Happiness by giving and happiness by taking. So this happiness by taking can be compared to material life, and happiness to giving can be compared to spiritual life.
Yeah, well, also, the soul, he also accepts what Krishna gives. So it's not that we just give, we also take from Krishna. So we want to give to Krishna, and then we take what he gives us back. So both, tadati pratigrinati, spiritual life is also giving and taking. But giving to Krishna and receiving from Krishna. She wants to take from Krishna. Yeah, she only wants to give to Krishna to please him. And even when she takes from Krishna, it's because she wants to please Krishna too. But she still takes. She's very anxious to get Krishna's prasad, his remnants. Anything that reminds her of Krishna.
The next question in the line could be why then are things as they are? What would be Shlok's answer?
Because we wanted to find out what it would be like to be independent of Krishna.
Why are we then? I mean, an atheist is an atheist question, of course. How would you answer?
Why
is it that we are? Such a being? But why is there no possibility to become equal to God? Why is it arranged in such a way on Krishna?
Because it doesn't make any sense. How? Because we can't. That we are who we are. Because that's who we are. We can also, practically speaking, when one is in the kingdom of God, he's almost equal to God. He gets as much power as God is. Because we're like if the sunlight wonders, why can't I be the sun? It can go on wondering. That's what we're doing now. Why can't we be like the sun? But the sunlight's not the sun. It's the sunlight. We just don't want to recognize who we really are. Why can't we be God? That's the question we've been asking since we've been here. And the answer is, you just can't be God. That's all. That's the answer. Keep on asking it. Yes.
I'd like to ask, if you don't mind, a question about the next verse. I just heard...
No, you can ask.
No, okay.
You can ask me later. Thank you very much. Any other questions from you? You don't have a question to him?
I was remembering that one time someone said, did you ever go to the
cult? To what?
The Kajigo cult?
Yeah.
They asked him, what can you do so great in the circle? Well, why did you read? And he said, no, you're cool, why would you? He just reminded me of that.
Kantarashimad Bhagavatam Kidai, Srila Prabhupada Kidai, Gaur Premanande.